This episode is brought to you by Progressive Insurance. What if comparing car insurance rates was as easy as putting on your favorite podcast? With Progressive, it is. Just visit the Progressive website to quote with all the coverages you want. You'll see Progressive's direct rate, then their tool will provide options from other companies so you can compare. All you need to do is choose the rate and coverage you like. Quote today at progressive.com to join the over 28 million drivers who trust Progressive. Progressive Casualty Insurance Company and Affiliates. Comparison rates not available in all states or situations. Prices vary based on how you buy.
What kind of programs does this school have? How are the test scores? How many kids do a classroom? Homes.com knows these are all things you ask when you're home shopping as a parent. That's why each listing on Homes.com includes extensive reports on local schools, including photos, parent reviews, test scores, student-teacher ratio, school rankings, and more. The information is from multiple trusted sources and curated by Homes.com's dedicated in-house research team. It's all so you can make the right decision for your family. Homes.com. We've done your homework.
College holds a mythic place in American culture. But there are stories you won't hear on the campus tours.
The higher-ups are concerned about one thing, and that is avoiding scandal.
I'm Margo Gray. On the new podcast, Campus Files, we cover everything from rigged admissions to the drama of Greek life and student protests. Listen to and follow Campus Files, an Odyssey original podcast. Available now on the free Odyssey app and wherever you get your podcasts.
Ground in Fort Myers, Florida right now because that's where I'm probably going to be for the majority of time, but that doesn't mean we aren't going to be talking to everybody throughout Major League Baseball, everybody through baseball, the fans of baseball, everybody. We appreciate everybody who listens, who subscribes, who rates, who reviews, who is just part of the conversation. We truly, truly do. I really, really have enjoyed everything about baseball and boring, including getting a chance to show everybody my commitment with a short sleeve shirt, thanks to my tattoo on my left arm. The Baseballs and Boring tattoo, which one other human being also has on his inside of his bicep, and that's Joe Kelly, who will be appearing on the podcast later this week. But kicking off this week, we caught up with Scott Boras, super agent, Scott Boras. Obviously, he has been a huge, huge part of the road that has led to the 2025 season, the road that it was paved through to the 2024-2025 offseason, and after last year, where he certainly took some hits, there's no question about it. Guys like Jordan Montgomery, who didn't get his deal, Matt Chapman, Blake Snell, all those guys last year, it put a dent in Scott Boras's, the narrative around Scott Boras that he gets huge, huge money for everybody. Well, he's rebounded a little bit this year. Certainly, you look at a free agency or an offseason that started with Juan Soto getting a deal that could come out to about $800 million. That's a pretty good launching pad. That's a pretty good T-shirt gun when it comes to really peeing on your territory for the entirety of the offseason. And it was pretty early, so he had that one in the bank. Then you have Corbin Burnes, another one. You had Blake Snell, another one. So you already had the pieces in place. Now, there could be some debate with some of these other guys, including the player who I just witnessed the press conference for, Alex Bregman. But, you know, Bregman still, the fact of the matter is, got an enormous AAV with an opportunity with two opt-outs, which was a huge, huge deal when it comes to getting this deal done with the Red Sox. In case you don't know, and I've articulated this for the last couple of days, we've talked a lot about Bregman. We've had a lot of Bregman content on this podcast in the last couple of days. But really how this shook out at the end was the Red Sox acquiescing to Scott Boras and Alex Bregman when it came to the opt-outs, getting opt-outs after the first and second year of that third-year deal. So that made it much more palatable, certainly, for Scott Boras, for Alex Bregman, who does have a qualifying offer attached. But anyway, we got up with Scott Boras to talk about the aforementioned Alex Bregman pursuit, the chase, the contract, his lot in life, all of that. A lot of Alex Bregman talk about that free agency, but also about the dynamic of this offseason and how that offseason was. As you heard at the very beginning of this podcast, Scott Boras feels pretty good about things as we have this offseason come to a close. Feels pretty good about things. Lot of money. Well, all right. Okay. Well, it's certainly his right to say that. He's had a lot of money put into his clients' checking accounts. There's no question about that. I do think that at the end of the day, when you look at Scott Boras about how he rebounded from really, whether or not, however he would say it, however some people would say it, the perception, the narrative around him after last offseason, it wasn't one of his finest hours. How he has rebounded this offseason, it's hard to argue. And again, Juan Soto helps that a whole lot. And they knew that was coming. That's fine. All right. Well, so here you go. We're going to start off with Scott Boras. And then I'm going to give you a conversation I had with Patrick Sandoval, who was a free agent in this aforementioned offseason. A guy who had brace surgery. A guy who is hopeful of coming back sometime in 2025, the 2025 season. A guy who's an opening day starter for the Angels. A guy who is a very good pitcher, has a very good changeup. I love talking changeups with guys. So here's an interesting guy to sit down with, so that's exactly what I did. So first I'm going to give you Scott Boras, and I'm going to give you Patrick Sandoval. All right, here you go. Here's Scott.
So when you look at this negotiation, it was a lot of different sort of avenues, I guess you could have taken. Is that fair to say?
Yeah, players with qualifying offers that are 30 or so, it's you just see a quadrant of things getting done much later in the process because teams always pursue players and free agency that do not have draft picks attached. And so we've seen how the qualifying offer works for really young players like a Soto, 26. It doesn't really matter much to them, but the metrics of how baseball ops works today is that they want to preserve their draft picks and see if they can pursue alternate courses. But in Bregman's case, the demand for his talent, his resume, all of that, he got long-term offers. He got optionality such as this contract that we did with Boston, and he had to make a tough decision because, you know, we're talking about millions of dollars that he could have guaranteed, yet he chose to come here with certainly greater annual potentials, but certainly sacrificed a lot in the guarantee to be a Red Sox.
When you have the meeting with them with Soto, or so the Soto stuff happens, it seemed like they really want to pivot to Bregman. Did you get that sense?
You know, I think that it was kind of Bregman was always a part of it. There was never any question that he wasn't. And I don't know what they would have done if Juan had signed here, but my clear impression was they were pursuing him no matter what.
Yeah. When you look at the deal you guys did, what's attractive to you about the flexibility of the opt-outs but also the really high value guarantee over time?
You know, when the qualifying offer remained in the CBA and you have star-level players, I had to create something that was to a player's well-being because the teams just didn't want to do long-term contracts with qualifying offered players. So I created when I did A-Rod's contract, I created the opt-out. And so then I just created a bridge contract where I could basically give the player optionality and some guarantee. And the club then had an avenue of not to offer the long term, but all pursue the bridge contract with the understanding that it allowed us time for discussion and an opportunity to remain in the organization. And if not, you know, move in another direction.
Talk about the qualifying offer. It seems like, you know, fans have a base level understanding of that whole process. But in your opinion, do teams value those draft picks way too much?
Statistics will tell you the way too much part, but they have a belief in their scouting and development where the valuations on those picks are extraordinarily meaningful to them. So, again, you can't fault any organization for not feeling that way, but history says that they're about a 1 in 14 chance of getting a 6-year player, is what our data says. You know?
Does Alex's belief in himself made you more comfortable to give him those sort of opt-out options? Or?
Absolutely. You adhere to what the player is about, and there's some players you'd never do this with, but with a guy like Alex Bregman, he is just built with an understanding of himself, a confidence, trust his preparation. He's a player who historically has gotten off to, you know, slow starts, and it never impacts him. He always goes through a season, performs at high levels, and the day-to-day of where he's at, he just has a relative trust and confidence that he's going to be that type of player.
It's about the conversation with John, which you said kind of was a turning point, talking about we got to get back to being the Red Sox and all that. Where was that in the timeline? Like, how recent was that? Was it at the beginning, more recently, or?
I think it was after Soto signed. We had a discussion, and I could tell from knowing John back with the Marlins and such that he had a real onus about we need to really do things differently than what we've done before. And Tom came out, and we had dinner in L.A., and he voiced the same thing. So I knew from the ownership level that they were really looking to correct what has happened the last 5-6 years.
From your business standpoint, how strange has it been to see a team with these resources not, over the last few years, be the players they were for a long time? You've been critical of teams that haven't exercised their financial might to get better. That would apply to the Red Sox here until recently. How do you see that evolution?
You know, when you talk to major market teams, they always talk about the stress of revolution and that this is the potentials they have are minimized by that process. And we do our best to not tell teams what to do, but provide certainly indices, past historic information to let them know. But in the end, this game is personal. These owners have needs and ideals, and their hope of what they do, a lot of it is attached to their own personal feeling. And this is a point in time where I believe Red Sox ownership was again hungry for championship play. And I think very, very exhausted with what has happened in the last few years
here. The deferrals, is that something you kind of had to be talked into? Or how much am I sticking with my
deferrals aren't exactly in my playbook, certainly it's a present part of the game. You just have metrics, you do evaluations. You try to accommodate teams where, you know, we listen and look at things, but in the end, you try to figure out a formula that maybe allows them what they need provides us with, you know, a net present value that's appropriate for the player's service.
You mentioned you give Gratz a lot of credit for having, to make 14 phone calls to get things done. Is that different than some of the teams that cross it?
That borders on really intensity, because normally in these negotiations, the trials, the offering, the suggestions are they're not something to fit. And with all the other things involved in this, you know, because I, the part of it is that, you know, it's rare that you have a player that in this situation has both long-term and short-term opportunity. And those decisions for a family and for a team, because often the clubs are not really used to dealing in that environment, because they're normally talking about, well, this player is within the realm of 1 year difference maybe, but often these are sometimes 3 year differences in guarantee and what they do. So to meet that guarantee aspect and also create flexibility, those were things that the Red Sox have not done. And so this type of contract, when I first did it for Correa with the Twins, having a three-year contract with two opt-outs, it's not something that's commonly done. And so getting used to that idea of why that worked, why it was accommodated their greatest need, and I think their greatest need was they wanted to see a lot about how their young players are playing, but they also wanted to see, you know, what AB's involvement was or who he was, because I, as much as AC can tell them about Bregman's influence, I think it's something that an organization has to feel to really put a value to.
When it comes to Houston, you know, they make some acquisitions and they go on the record saying, talk about Alex almost in the past tense. Then they come back and there's reports they're back in it. If any insight you can give in terms of that involvement or what that was like?
I think it just illustrates the rareness of Houston knows who this player is and what he means. And it's kind of a credit to them that they continue to keep their toe in the water to try to get this kind of player, because they're, in many ways, irreplaceable. Durable, plays at a high level, big moment player, championship player, leader. To have a player with a skill set and all the leadership aspects of it, I just think you keep on thinking, where are we going to find a replacement for this? And I think organizations who know him, I think they have difficulty letting that go.
Did this remind you of the J.D. Martinez negotiation with these guys at all? Just kind of the way it kind of was a kind of protracted thing and the opt-outs?
J.D.'s negotiation was more about, in a way, his style of leadership was unknown to the team. Because I went to John and Tom and I go, this guy fits. It was in November. I think he makes a big difference. And my advocacy is often viewed with a bias, of course. And then December, the same thing. And then January. And I said, look, in my database, it says that you're going to have anywhere from an 8 to 12% greater chance of winning with JD on your team. Because he's going to do this for Jackie. He's going to do this for Bogey and for Devers and for Mookie and all the elements. We had all the data worked out. And because I think Mookie had 260 the year before. I said, this kind of talent, he needs psychology because he has all the skill. And JD can provide that. And to AC's credit, and Tom and John, they finally said, all right, but if it blows up, I'll kill you. You know, kind of thing. And I remember they happened to win in L.A. And so we were up in the suite. It was a very nice I told you so moment for me. Yeah.
You've had a lot of these guys now doing the opt-out situation. Well, does it take a special guy to mentally handle that load that Pete and Alex are going to be going through this year and thinking about?
You know, some players view it as the great thing about these bridge contracts. I have definition about the pillow contracts for kind of an injured player come for 1 year, but a bridge contract gives a player security. And so it's just not about 1 year, because if anything really happens, then he has the second year and the third year. So the idea of it is that it relaxes a player. It allows for him not to have that 1 year itis, if you will, where he knows that if things did go awry, I have an opportunity to return to an environment I selected, and it gives him a level of security and comfort that way different than just a standard two-year contract with an opt-out.
Alex talked about how he loves kind of playing in high-pressure environments and stuff, but it's a little bit different when the pressure is you're the first player to put the Red Sox, you know, over the CBT in several years. You're the player that's kind of being heralded as we're getting back to being all caps the Red Sox. You know, that's a different thing that he hasn't had to deal with. Was that kind of part of the conversations of you'll be the guy that everyone's looking to right this ship after several years of frustrations and, you know, stuff like that?
I think when you win a World Series, like Houston did in 17, and then they lost a couple, and I think they faced that in 22 because there were departures in Houston, and Bregman became the focus of the team, him and Altuve, really. Jordan was just coming into his own, all those things. So kind of familiar with that, but it's not how he thinks. How he thinks is he's a very day-to-day player. He is so immersed in data and prep and also prepping up his teams. You know, I have a pitcher with the Astros, Hunter Brown, and he's calling his pitches during the game, encouraging him to throw his two-seam. When I see this as a hitter, this gets me off balance. So he is very, very entwined into a whole number of things about winning that do not allow him the space to think about the pressure or expectation that's placed upon him.
Do you see him as like a future big league manager? Like 10 years, 20 years from now, you're sitting here with a player and the manager is Alex Bregman, you know, sort of like Grezzo.
I knew AC was going to be a manager because he wasn't going to make $100 million. It's hard to say with the economics of the game, but I will tell you this. The reason he won't be a manager is because his son, Knox, has the best swing of anybody under five. And I get a chance to look at this market. He has the best swing under five that I've ever seen. He is something else. I mean, at 2 years of age, he can square up a ball, stay inside, go oppo. We have like a little Wrigley Field in my office where, and Knox has taken it over the fence. And 4 hours straight, he just sat there and swing. So if you're asking me what Alex is going to be doing, I'm telling you, that would probably be the reason he's going to be focused on something other than being a manager.
Knox is your youngest client ever?
Yeah. Well, I had him sign that document right away.
Is that you on that with a crayon?
No doubt.
The next holiday family. Yeah.
Every offseason's different. How do you view this offseason now that we're almost at the conclusion of it?
Well,
almost.
You know, when you're in this business a long time and you get the blessings of what we had this offseason, I mean, I don't know, we've done almost near $2 billion in contracts. And so Juan Soto and Burns, Snell, AB, and all of them. So it's been a real blessing for us. Very much so.
All right, always interesting talking with Scott Boras. I honestly believe that, think that, live that, all of it. It's an interesting, whether you believe him or not, whether you agree with him or not, whatever it is, the guy thinks a lot about baseball. And when we want to fall in love with a great game of baseball, we like to think outside the box. We like to get different perspectives. And always a different perspective from Boras. All right, well, another perspective we're going to give you is from Patrick Sandoval.
When you think about businesses that are selling through the roof like Aloe, Allbirds, or Skims, sure, you think about a great product, a cool brand, and brilliant marketing. But an often overlooked secret is actually the businesses behind the business, making selling and for shoppers buying simple. For millions of businesses, that business is Shopify. Nobody does selling better than Shopify, home of the number one checkout on the planet and the not so secret secret with Shop Pay that boosts conversions up to 50%, meaning way less carts going abandoned and way more sales going. So if you're into growing your business, your commerce platform better be ready to sell whenever your customers are scrolling or strolling on the web, in your store, in their feed, and everywhere in between. Upgrade your business and get the same checkout experience as business powerhouses like Aloe, Allbirds, and Skims. Sign up for your $1 per month trial period at shopify.com/odysseypodcast, all lowercase. Go to shopify.com/odysseypodcast to upgrade your selling today. shopify.com/odysseypodcast.
Well, who, as we mentioned earlier in the podcast, has signed a deal with the Red Sox, and this is going to be a very, very interesting one to watch. When we look at all these starting pitchers who were signed, Patrick Sandoval signs this deal with the Sox, and he does it even though he knows he's not going to pitch for the majority of the year. But if he does pitch, then you have somebody who might be able to help you in a stretch drive who has some sort of track record. It's a tough thing to do, but I always hesitate when it comes to say, oh, no, look, you're going to get this guy. It's going to be like a trade deadline acquisition. It's tough because not only do you have to come back from injury, you have to come back from not pitching, and you can't just expect to pick up where you left off. But it doesn't matter. We still love talking to Patrick. We still love talking about his evolution. We still love talking about his best pitch, which is like, we could do podcasts on changeups all the live long day. We also would love talking to him about the great game of baseball. All right. Hope everyone's having a great day. We're going to finish things off. Here you go. Here's Patrick Sandoval.
So when it comes to like coming into spring training now, in with the optimism that you have about your healing process and heading for going forward, is it exciting? Is it different? Because this is a whole new world for you, right?
Yeah, it's kind of like everything's new. I've never, never come to spring training recovering from an injury, knowing that, it's going to be a minute before I'm back on the field, and then also coming into a new clubhouse. It has been kind of a whirlwind the last 3 days or whatever, kind of just getting my feet under me here. Yeah. But it's awesome. I love the staff here, and the guys here have been great so far.
But you want to jump on the mound. You get around here and you want to throw baseballs.
I'm not really in the offseason. I'm around some guys that are throwing bullpens and stuff. But here, everyone's getting ready to go.
Yeah.
I'm just chomping at the bit to get out there too. So, yeah.
So if I can talk to you a little bit about the dynamic of what you are as a pitcher compared to the rest of the world of baseball, right? Mm-hmm. Which is, Alex Cora talked about this yesterday, about this, oh my goodness, like this guy's throwing 100, this guy's throwing 100, this guy's throwing 100. But you have a unique pitch, which is an effective pitch, which is say, okay, try to hit that pitch.
Yeah.
I don't know if you've talked to a lot of guys about that or if anyone has ever tried to change you at all, because I wouldn't change you because if you have a good pitch, you have a good pitch. But there must be some satisfaction of saying, hey, you know what? I get it. Everyone's chasing this, but I got this.
Yeah. Yeah. I mean, velo is obviously important and, gives guys, less of a reaction time to swing or make a decision, swing or not swing, whatever. But I think if you have, multiple pitches that you can go to that, are pretty deceptive, slow the hitter down, you can speed them up with, whatever you have. So, no one's ever really tried to change me at all.
Good.
Yeah. And I don't think I need much changing as a pitcher with my repertoire and stuff like that. But, it's – there are a lot of guys here that throw 100, and I'm definitely not one of them. Yeah.
Well, yeah. What's the fastest you ever threw a pitch?
In a major league game, I think 98.
That's pretty good.
Yeah, it's close.
You're almost there.
Close, but no cigar. Yeah.
I mean, were you one of these guys who chased 100 or no?
No, I never really, hunted velo down.
Yeah.
I feel like as I've matured and as my body, I've grown into my body, it kind of has come with age and with experience being on the mound and mechanics and being able to move my body efficiently.
Yeah, 98 is legit though.
Yeah. Definitely felt good.
Who taught you your best pitch?
My changeup. I've thrown the same changeup whole career.
What type of changeup is it?
Just a normal circle change.
There's a circle change. Vulcan grip, nothing. No.
Nothing fancy about the grip. But I'd say probably when I got drafted by the Astros in 2015, I'd say that spring training and extended spring training of 16 and 17, we really hammered like the changeup and spent a lot of time working on it. Just the more I look back on it, it wasn't even perfecting the shape or anything. It was more so the release point and the consistency of how I was releasing it and being able to throw it in that lower outer third to a righty. And I think just the reps. I threw so many changeups in
throwing
program. We would go into the side field and only throw changeups.
Yeah.
And so I think that really like solidified that pitch for me and gave me a lot of confidence in it as well.
When did you realize, maybe it wasn't even at a bat, yeah, like where you're like, okay, this is my thing. This is like the hard work's paying off.
Yeah.
This is unique.
That's also the crazy thing too, is with the Astros, they were big, you know, four seams at the top, a big curveball at the bottom. And I had like a okay fastball. I was throwing like 88, 91 in the minor leagues with them. And then my curveball wasn't anything crazy either. 76, had some depth, but it wasn't like, you know, the Houston sharp up and then straight down. And we were throwing, I think, 10% changeups in our game. That was like our requirement, was we had to throw 10% because no one really wanted to throw. Everyone wanted to throw this and the fastball at the top. And it wasn't until I got traded to the Angels I started throwing the changeup and seeing everyone was swinging and missing at it when I was in high A and double A, and I just kept throwing it. And I was like, all right, look, this is going to be me, you know?
Isn't that bizarre, like how, and I get it in the minor leagues, they sort of like, they like, this is the way we do things, you know?
Yeah.
And but it's not always the best way to, and it's no knock on the Astros or anything, but.
Yeah. I mean, there's always outliers to the rules that they have or whatever, and I was definitely one of them. I didn't realize how good my changeup was until I left the Astros and started throwing it a little bit more.
This is a cliche question, but was there a bat or someone you like? You like, oh man.
There was just a game, I would say. It was my first game with the Angels in San Jose in high A, and I don't know the numbers on it, but I threw, it felt like a million changeups, and they could not stop swinging and missing at it.
Yeah.
I was like, okay. It's working.
I love, like, I got to be honest with you, I love going way back to Trevor Hoffman or guys who, you know, Devin Williams, whatever it is. Like, what do you say? Okay, here it is. Mm-hmm. Here it is. Here's this pitch.
Yeah.
Boom. Good luck with that.
Exactly.
That must be a great feeling.
It is. It's cool, too. In a certain point in a game when you're throwing a lot of them, it's like they know it's going to come, or that it's coming, and they're still not able to put a swing on it, and it gives you a lot of confidence.
Were you watching Tommy Canley this offseason, this postseason?
Yeah, a little bit, yeah.
I mean, he threw literally 50 straight changeups.
Yeah, it's insane. I mean,
have you ever thrown 50 straight changeups?
Not 50 straight. No way. Try that, though.
I mean, it's unbelievable. It's unbelievable. You mentioned, I have to ask, any interaction with Alex Bregman at all, or?
No, none.
No, okay.
We were drafted the same year, but obviously he was far more advanced in baseball than I was.
Yeah.
And he made it up pretty quick, so our paths never really crossed.
Okay.
Yeah.
So, but you probably could feel
it. I play against him, obviously.
Yeah, yeah. You throw change-ups to him?
I don't think I've thrown many. Yeah. I don't think I've had much success against him, so thank God he's here.
Right? All right. Well, I just didn't know, like, even the vibe with Houston, I like, they talk about, you know, like his presence and everything.
Yeah,
like that.
That's all I've heard. I mean, I know a bunch of guys that have played with him, and you know, all I've heard is great things about him. He's a winner and brings a certain culture with him. So I'm excited to have that.
Awesome. Last question: why isn't baseball boring for you? There's no wrong answers. There's no wrong answers.
For me, I think it's different than, you know, if you ask a fan. But for me, it's the game is constantly changing. And you constantly have to adapt, and you know, you can't ever be satisfied with, you know, whatever result you had the next day. You got to come into work, and there's stuff. There's always something to get better at, and that's what I love. I love the process of getting better and learning new things, and just being exposed to, you know, everything that comes with baseball. The people that you meet, the, you know, the different cultures that are around. It's insane. If I worked a regular job, I would never have met any of these kinds of people. It's
right. When you go at 7, when you have to show up for work at 7 in the morning, which you do like in spring training, which people don't understand. It's a bizarre environment. You walk in of, how am I going to get better? Talking to other people who want to get better. How did you do this? And all of that. I mean, I'm glad you brought that up, because we just trudge in here in spring training, but it is a unique environment, right?
Yeah, absolutely. You know, you have guys of all different backgrounds coming in here. You have guys that are, you know, 10 plus year vets, guys that are trying to make a team, guys that are trying to revive a career, guys that are trying to recover. And it's just, you know, a lot of hard work, and it's a good culture to kind of be around. You guys are all working their asses off to be the best they can possibly be.
I'm sorry, the last question, just because it's sort of checking off the box. No, I know timeline freaks everybody out.
Yeah.
What is your expectations for this year?
I've tried to not set any, you know, cement expectations. I just, you know, trying to take this day by day, because I know how long and how much of a grind this I guess I don't know. I'm halfway through it, but from what I've heard, it's a grind, and you can't really, you know, set expectations. You got to just go day by day and listen to your body.
That's why I don't say timeline.
Yeah, so you can just make sure that you get back to the best best possible, you know, version of yourself.
I mean, you can pick up a t-shirt and say, timelines freak us the F out. Yeah. So, yeah. Thank you, man. Yeah, appreciate it.